This podcast episode is brought to you by Paleo Valley's Organic Extra Virgin Olive Oil. Now, we all know that many olive oils are cut with seed oils or that they are rancid, and so it's not always easiest to find a quality and properly sourced olive oil. Yes, in case you didn't know, many store-bought olive oils are diluted or blended, compromising both taste and quality, and may even cause rancidity. I'm really glad that Paleo Valley's extra virgin olive oil remains pure and unadulterated, sourced from a single organic valley in Greece. Paleo Valley ensures freshness and nutrient content by packaging their olive oil in dark glass bottles. At a certain point, I stopped using extra virgin olive oil, but once our practice started working with people with chronic inflammatory response syndrome, or SIRS, we started recommending it for the reduction of TGF-beta-1. It is an immune system marker that shows inflammation both for COVID-19, SIRS, and actually many other illnesses. So if your TGF-beta-1 is high, you may want to try incorporating a little bit of extra virgin olive oil. Make sure to check it out. It comes in a 2-pack package. And remember, all Paleo Valley products are guaranteed with a money-back guarantee. Go to paleovalley.com/NWJ to get 15% off your order. Thanks for supporting companies that support this podcast.
That stuff is ridiculous. It's unnecessary. Hopefully we get away from that. We get to like, what is sort of realistic and practical? Like I said, you know, if I'm out there saying just eat ground beef and eggs and you're good, that's people can get behind that. But what gets the attention is some wacko eating raw brains and testicles. I mean, and this is what, you know, the media focuses on, social media focuses on, and it's sort of a disservice to the many, because a lot of people are off put by that.
Hey guys, it's Judy from Nutrition with Judy. Today I had the pleasure of sitting down with Dr. Sean Baker again. I think this is our fourth or fifth time interviewing. This is our third World Carnivore Month celebration interview. And this time it's a little different, where we talk about certain specific concerns on the carnivore diet, things that we are looking forward to and how we need to progress carnivore even further. And then we do a lot of fun rapid fire questions. So if you want to know little things about Dr. Baker that you may not have known and in relation to carnivore, this is the episode you want to watch. We talk a lot about World Carnivore Month, how carnivore is in practicality and reality, and how to make it stick for you to truly be successful on it. Let's get right into the interview. Hi, Dr. Baker. It's always such a pleasure to have you on my channel. And I think this is the third year of you joining me during World Carnivore Month. So it's kind of exciting to just have this as an annual thing. But what World Carnivore Month year is this? And then what have you seen that is different than, I don't know, like the even maybe 6-7-ish years ago? And do you think it's become more dogmatic or more fluid? What do you think?
Well, to answer your first question, I think this is the 7th year, if I'm not mistaken. So wait, no, let me think. No, we I think we started in, actually, I think 2018 was the first year we did it. So 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 7th year. Yeah, this is the 7th year we've done this. So yeah, it's been interesting. I think as far as the changes over the years, I mean, gosh, it's just a number of people. I mean, God, yeah. Carnivore has just grown and grown and grown and grown. And I just got back from a meeting in Florida, and I mean, gosh, I wasn't a carnivore event, but there was probably 20% of the people in that audience were doing it. So it's grown tremendously. Yeah. I mean, I think, has it gotten more dogmatic? I don't know that it has. I think there's been more people that have been sort of trying different things, which I'm, you know, like I said, I've set up from the beginning. I don't know at all. I certainly don't. And I don't think anybody does. So I'm always in favor of people experimenting, seeing what's working for them. We're seeing, I mean, there are certainly people that are very dogmatic about it. There's no doubt about that. So sorry, my alarm went off to remind me to go to this meeting. So I'm here. Yeah. I mean, without question, I think it's with us to stay at this point. And I know, I can remember several years ago, maybe 5 years ago, people were saying, like a lot of vegans were saying, well, if we just ignore people that are carnivore, they'll go away and it'll sort of fade into existence as any other fad sort of does. But, at this point, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe 10 years from now, it'll be like, we haven't heard of carnivore again, but I suspect it's going to continue to grow. And, anyway, that's a sort of a lengthy answer to a short question. So
yeah,
anyway.
No, I totally agree with you. I think it's here to stay. I think it's just the way that we're intended to eat. Now, maybe some people will add in a few plants, but generally speaking, I think meat-based is the ultimately healing diet. So I totally agree. I don't think it's a fad. Can you share an update about Rivero? I know you have been working so hard in building this network. If you can just share, is it live yet or is it about to be live in January?
Yeah. So, and I should be very transparent. Well, I'm working hard, but there are a lot of other, there's a whole team. I mean, my co-founder, Masar Stami, has been working like a maniac, hasn't slept in like 6 months, I think, to try to get this thing launched. We've got a team of engineers, you know, a operations team, a clinical team. We have physicians licensed in all 50 states that are ready to go. And so the last I am told, because every time I say we're ready to launch, they say, wait, no, we got to do this and that. We had to completely 6 different companies in order to do what we want to do. And so the last I've been told is around December 15th. Now, this is interesting. As Judy, are you in Austin? Is that where? I can't remember where you're at. So I'll be coming to Austin in 2 weeks. And the reason I'm going back on the Rogan podcast. So that will also be a nice opportunity and coincide very nicely with our launch. So yeah, we're excited. For the people that haven't heard, I'm wearing a t-shirt here for Rivero. Just fortuitously, I didn't plan on it for today's talk. I just happened to throw it. I gotta wear a t-shirt. I'm usually wearing t-shirts. So,
right.
And I just grabbed this one out of the closet today. Digital health company, online, all 50 states. Mission is to basically reverse disease using nutrition, lifestyle, you know, the stuff we should all be doing all along. But unfortunately, you know, as a physician, you just don't get a chance to do that. It's really hard to do that. You don't have the support, even if you want to do it. And even if you're set up as like an independent practitioner doing direct primary care, you're limited in how much time you have, how much support you have. And so we're putting all the support in there. So it makes it, you know, what I think what you need. And it requires not only just the right sort of roadmap, but also all the support that's around that. And you just don't have the capacity or the time to do that. So you need a support system of coaches, of data collection, you know, of the technology that we now have to do that. So that's in short what we're doing.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. We have a private practice and we see that it's not just about educating. I think at this point, because carnivore is so prevalent, it's not about teaching somebody exactly how to eat. Sometimes there is a little bit of that nuance, but it's also just having people have community to know that, hey, today might be hard, but let's muscle through because this is a good diet for healing. And so the coaches and the dietitians and all of the other supports are so important around the doctor. So I completely agree with that. And it makes so much sense. And I'm so excited for that, for our carnivore community. I saw that you recently shared a post or a video, I forget, but you shared that you're changing a little bit of your diet. What exactly, if you could share a little bit, are you still on this updated version of your diet and what's going on?
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of people saw, well, Dr. Baker's going back to a ketogenic diet. That's, I mean, in part true. I'm still carnivore. I mean, I'm not eating blueberries and raspberries and spinach or anything like that. It's still strictly animal products. I just changed the ratio of fat to protein. Mm-hmm. And the reason I did that was I had an injury doing jujitsu it was back in August. So I had some cervical radicular symptoms. So basically my head got squashed and flexed underneath my body weight with another 220 pound person on top of me. And so because of that, I had a disc herniation in my neck and it's squishing on a nerve and it's neuroinflammation. And we know that a ketogenic diet has, at least there's a lot of data on that. There's still studies in the literature that show that ketosis in that situation has been helpful for neuroinflammation. And so I was doing that just in an effort to help, decrease the symptoms, and it helped. It has helped, I'll have to say. And I'm still doing that to a degree, although honestly, it's kind of funny. I personally do not enjoy eating a very fat diet. I mean, I eat some, you know, I guess I should qualify that. My diet on a day-to-day basis, if I eat a ribeye steak, I'm probably consuming 60 to 70% of my calories are coming from fat, which is, you know, pretty consistent with that's pretty representative of my diet. I mean, there's, you know, some, that's not exactly my diet, but that's pretty much, if you say, what is your diet in a nutshell, I'd say ribeye steak. Now to go sort of in more ketosis or being more ketogenic, I eat even more fat, which is, you know, I might be adding fat to that. And that's something I honestly don't enjoy it as much, I'll just be honest. But I'm doing that as a temporary sort of measure to sort of minimize the inflammatory aspect of it. And I don't anticipate doing that long term. I'll probably go back to, I guess, a little bit more protein based diet.
Yeah, I totally get it. So in our practice, we will put people on a ketogenic version of carnivore, meaning higher fat, closer to 80% if they're combating something that is causing inflammation, but not everyone goes that way. So, and not a lot of people can even tolerate that amount of fat. So I totally understand. Are you checking ketones? And then do you feel a difference in terms of just being carnivore where you're not worried as much about being super high fat versus now that you're eating a little bit more fat with your ribeye, do you notice a difference?
So the answer is I did check some ketones initially just to see. I generally don't because I don't really care that much. It's not my goal is to manage how many ketones I'm at. I'm just, how do I feel basically?
Right.
And yeah, I did. And I was, you know, consistently, my ketones were like 2.5 millimolar. I saw one level. One time I was up to 6 at one point, but so yeah, they were higher than they had been because normally if I would check them, it would be quite low. They would be maybe 0.5, 0.6, sometimes below that even. So yeah, they're up. You know, initially I didn't notice, I couldn't tell you, I noticed a big, great difference in how I felt. But over time, consistently after, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, I noticed a reduction in symptoms by 30-40%, which is a win. So I'm pretty happy with that. And so right now I am, still symptomatic, but it's minimal. You know, it's something I can live with for sure. But you know, it's not quite 100% where I want to be, but it's pretty decent.
I love that you're using truly a dietary changes to support your pain that you're going through. So it just shows to everyone that watches your content and just follows you that there are ways to improve even a carnivore diet if you get in pain and if you have inflammation to just reduce it by, you know, making these modality changes or small changes and tweaks of adding more fat, which is not always fun, but you get to do that. And you could just use these simple changes instead of just getting on, you know, narcotics, for example. So I love that you shared that. I wanted to make this question, a Q&A this time different, where I was just going to ask you some rapid fire questions. So I don't know if you're up for it, but I'd love to just...
I'm up for the rapid fire question. I don't know how rapid fire my answers are, because I'm usually kind of new. There's nuance on most things,
but
I'll try my best to give you short answers.
Okay. No, that's game. So 3 words to define carnivore in your opinion.
Oh... 3 words to define carnivore. I wish I could almost need 4, but I would say meat-based therapy. How's that?
Meat-based therapy. No, sounds good. Top 3 tips of starting carnivore.
Eat enough. That's, I think, a problem that most people have. Enjoy what you eat and stay hydrated.
I think that's so important. Yeah, I see a lot of people say, well, I'm going to eat when I'm hungry. And sometimes you don't feel as hungry on carnivore. And then I'll see people then feel the same about hydration. But it's interesting, when we eat a lot of protein, we have a lot of breakdown products, which actually need water to help it release through our kidneys. So I think it's such an important point. But I do think a lot of people end up drinking less water on a carnivore diet. So that makes sense. Thoughts of GMO fruits and hybridized fruits over the years. Do you think the fruits we eat today are the same as, I don't know, 100, 200 years ago?
No, I mean, they're clearly not. I mean, you know, whether that's making them worse or not, or a problem is debatable, but they're not the same. That's undisputable for sure.
Well, the argument would be that since they're bigger or sweeter, that there's likely more fructose per fruit that you're eating. And if you eat 3 fruits, that's so different than maybe it would be equivalent to 10 fruits back in the day. So that would be my only thing.
Yeah, that's clear. They're hybridized to be more sweeter, bigger. I mean, you got strawberries the size of your fist now. You go to the store and like, holy cow, where did that come from? Yeah, they've changed for sure. Is that making people more sick or is it worse because of that? That's debatable. I mean, sure. I think you can make an argument either way potentially, but yeah, they're definitely different.
Okay, fair enough. I think I know this answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What is your one cut of meat if you had to live on just that meat for the rest of your life?
It's going to be a steak that has enough fat in it. So probably a ribeye steak for sure. Yeah, I mean, there's other cuts that you could probably argue also sort of fill that bill. But, you know, ribeye is pretty much, I think that's pretty prototypical of a well-balanced steak in my view.
If you were to not eat ribeye, what's your next favorite meat, including fish?
Yeah, I mean, probably lamb would be second. I mean, okay. I think lamb is, you know, arguably the lamb might even be more beneficial than, I mean, you can make that argument as well that it's more beneficial than beef. But the problem in the U.S., lamb is just harder to come by. It tends to be more expensive in the United States for beef. But you go to other countries, you know, I just got back from Greece and lamb's there, and I was in UK and lamb is good. So lamb would certainly be my second choice.
Okay. What's the most unusual meat you've tried?
Probably fermented shark. It was kind of fun. I had this wonderful host, Ivar Osford from Iceland that brought me out there. Gosh, it was been back in, I think it was 2020, early 2018. And he set me up with all these weird delicacies and whale blubber and fermented shark and, you know, various sort of weird organs and things like that. But yeah, I'd say fermented shark was probably the weirdest.
Okay, interesting. If you had to pick one spice you would add to your meat, what would that spice be? Hey guys, I'm excited to share that I'll be speaking at Hack Your Health by KetoCon May 31st through June 2nd. You can come by and say hi while I do a book signing or join me during the food addiction panel or the triumphs in troubleshooting on a carnivore diet panel on the main stage. Hack Your Health by KetoCon is the largest event in the US focused solely on the science and stories of tools to improve your health journey. As part of the conference, there are over 200 vendors and 70 speakers that include medical professionals, practitioners, coaches, and experts. I love this event because it's the largest community gathering of like-minded people. I guarantee you, you'll make at least one friend. Make sure to get your 3-day pass and use code NWJ50 to get $50 off your 3-day general admission pass. Go to hackyourhealth.com and get tickets today. It's an incredible experience you don't want to miss. And if you're at the conference, make sure to come by and say hello. Remember, use code NWJ50 to get $50 off your tickets.
Just salt doesn't count as a spice. So, I mean, that's generally what I do. Salt. I'd say probably, gosh, just maybe pepper. I mean, just from a taste. And I know there's people that don't tolerate pepper, but I mean or maybe rosemary. I mean, there may be some benefit that it's arguable that herbs are less deleterious to us than spices. But I mean, I enjoy the way things taste. So it's kind of funny. Somebody asked me why I salt my steak. Wanting some high level answer, I says because it tastes good.
Right,
that's really why I do it. But I suppose I could give you a more erudite explanation. But I do it because it tastes mostly. I think meat is what I eat, and the other stuff is, like I said, it's seasoning, it's flavor enhancements, and I don't know that it's not the big game changing type of thing. You know, and if you put a little, there's people that don't tolerate a lot of spices for sure. I know that's the case, and so you just have to be mindful of how it affects you.
Yeah, I find it so interesting that, you know, we advocate for a diet. I think people tend to think that if I just eat exactly the same way or the same amount or the timing or the seasoning or the fat, then I will look like them. But that's so not true. And so my guess is maybe that's why someone asked that thing about salt, because they wanted to understand to that level. But it's oftentimes when we are healthier, we have a little bit more grace in how we can swing with the spices and the herbs and the seasoning. So it's just interesting. If in a day, do you normally have two meals, one meal, three meals? How do you break up your meals?
And this has been pretty consistent. I mean, I vary from time to time occasionally, but generally two meals a day is pretty much, that would be sort of representative of what I eat 90% of the time. It's usually two meals a day. It's usually a late-ish breakfast, brunch, early lunch, whatever. That's usually my major meal. And I have usually something smaller in the late afternoon, early evening. That's my meal pattern. And you know, I vary from that from occasionally, depending, like if I'm traveling, like when I was out of town, I was kind of, you know, if I was at a big conference and everybody wanted to eat dinner. And so you're kind of like, okay, being socially graceful, you know, trying to be, you know, socially fitting in that way. You know, we would go to a steakhouse at night and I'd have a late dinner. It's not my preference, but, occasionally I'll do that.
Okay. And then do you have a certain amount of protein grams you try to hit in each meal?
In each meal, you know, for me, I don't even bother to eat unless I'm probably getting, I don't know, 70, 80, 100 grams of protein. Okay. Most like I'll just say I had my lunch about 2 hours ago and I had about 2 pounds of ribeye steak, okay, which is, that might've been 200 grams of protein, you know? Okay. So, again, remember in context, I'm 250 pounds. I'm active. I'm fairly lean. So I generally most days will get around 300 grams of protein a day, which seems a lot, but again, considering who I am and what I do, it's kind of what I need. So usually I get probably the majority of it. It might look like 200 grams in the first meal, maybe 100 grams at night if I do consume a meal at night. So
wow. Yeah. Okay. So a few questions on that. So when you went higher fat, have you reduced the actual protein amount or have you just added more fat?
No, I reduced the amount of protein as well. Okay. So I went from, it was something like, I remember I was probably eating 300 grams of protein and 200 grams of fat. And then I went probably 250 grams of fat and 200 grams of protein. So there was definitely a shift to less protein, more fat for sure.
Okay. But I still love the fact that you are eating 200 grams of protein and still in a highly ketogenic state, because there's a lot of information out there that says, unless you lower your protein grams to 60, you'll never hit ketosis, which clearly you're saying is not true. So I just appreciate that example. Do you have a favorite carnivore snack?
Yeah. I mean, there is carnivore snacks, as you're well aware, that Sylvia makes those. I can't
remember. And Mark, yeah.
But I do something similar. I mean, that's my favorite thing is I'll just basically thinly slice some steak, usually a fattier cut of meat. You know, like I'll take a chuck roast, put it in the fridge or freezer for about 2 hours, so it's firm. And then I got a meat slicer, slice it up thin and then salt it, food dehydrator, you know, for, you know, 8, 10, 12 hours. And that is great. I mean, that's such a, it's like, it's almost too addictive, you know, cause like potato chips, you're just like, keep wanting to eat them. It's a wonderful snack. It's great. That's by far my favorite thing. Now, do I need anything else? Yeah. I mean, occasionally I'll do like a boiled egg or something like that, but for sure that's it for sure.
Okay. And then in terms of exercise, if you had to only pick one type of exercise daily, you know, is there a favorite that you have? Cause I know you do so many.
Well, I mean, for me, I, you know, as far as my favorite exercise, gosh, it's hard to say. I mean, cause I value strength training so much. I think that's so incredibly important to do. So I would probably say, you know, again, I wouldn't just do one thing. I mean, that's okay. Just, I mean, because I strength train, I sprint, I jump, I do walking is great. I mean, gosh, I mean, it depends on who your audience is. I mean, just get out there. You know, in my view, not being sedentary is more important than exercise. You know, if you know, like I said, that is probably big, but then from there, you should go on to exercise, you know? So, I mean, if we're talking about the average listener that maybe, you know, not being sedentary is so important. I'm standing, like, you know, for this interview, I stand. I'm going to make fun of Judy because she's sitting.
I know
you, Judy, you don't have to worry about being overweight or that. I mean, you're very lean and stuff like that. But really, it is. I mean, it, you know, I used to be very critical of walking because it's just like, well, I still don't consider it exercise. It's not going to get you muscles. It's not going to, but the impact it'll have on your health versus someone who's completely sedentary is huge. It's orders of magnitude better. But after that, I would say if I had to rank order things, I'd say not being sedentary, strength training. And then from there, it might be some sort of cardiovascular exercise.
Yeah. I used to have the same mindset about walking, but I did a challenge earlier this year. And so I go to the gym 2 to 3 times. I know it's like nothing compared to you, but I do lifting. I'll do all the different types of exercises, but all I did was add 45 minutes of walking every day. And it wasn't even a brisk, it was just a normal steady pace. And that with just a little bit more water made me actually lose weight. And I'm pretty lean. So I was very surprised by just that difference. So I do think you're right. It's so much more different than just being sedentary. Even if it's just walking, I think it makes a huge difference. So that makes sense. What is a common myth about the carnivore diet that you feel should be debunked?
Oh gosh. I did a whole lecture at Low Carb Dinner called Demystifying the Carnivore Diet, where I talked about a number of things. And this is one thing that I think in general, like it's going to make me live longer or shorter. I mean, I think that is something that we have no idea about. I don't know. No one knows. People saying I'm doing this to live longer or it's going to make me live shorter. I think that on either side of that, it's just, we have no idea. And that's not why I do the diet. I think the diet is basically there to promote health and provide you health today. And what it does in the future is really unknowable. And I don't think we'll ever have studies that prove that one or disprove it one way or the other. That's probably the biggest thing. I mean, there's, you know, scurvy, you know, it's going to give you heart disease. It's going to, you know, it's going to make your bowels blow up or things like that. Those things are all basically, I think, unknowable. And well, I mean, we know people aren't getting scurvy on carnivore. If that had been the case, we would have had thousands of scurvy kids. Right. You know, at this point, there are probably, without exaggeration, hundreds of thousands of people that have tried this diet for X periods of time. And for the most part, people are not dropping dead of heart attacks or getting scurvy or any of the things that they've been warning us about. It's just not occurring, at least not to a degree that you could say it's causing a rise over the background, right? It's not the case. But I think really the belief that it is the key to longevity or things like that, I can't say that. So that may be funny because it's a myth that is, I think, perpetuated among the carnivore community. A lot of people think saying that this is what's going to make me live the longest. I don't know for sure.
I love that you're so real because, I mean, there are ways that we can prove that if inflammation is a culprit for earlier death and a lot of the diseases stem from that, well, then there are ways that we can prove that carnivore is lower inflammation. But even with all that stuff, I love that you're just realistic about, well, today I feel better. And that's what matters more than future focus, because we don't know the answer. We might go outside and get hit by a bus and die, right? We just don't know. But if today I feel better, if I have less inflammation today, if my neck injury is less today because I'm eating carnivore, then I think for most people, that should still be a lease on trying this, because if you don't feel good today, there's something you can do to actually feel better today. And I think that itself is powerful without overly selling the diet. And it's always why I've really mirrored and loved your message, because you're so practical with this way of eating and not just, you know, rainbows and unicorns. So I appreciate it so much.
Yeah. I mean, there are people who will say, well, you know, if you're taking cocaine, you feel good, or, you know, you can lose weight on hair. I mean, people counter with that argument. But I mean, realistically, I'm just saying, look, and this is what I think, this is a big problem with healthcare in general. I think you basically just kick the can down the road. I mean, when people come into you as a physician, they come to you because they're sick for some reason, and to not figure it out and actually get them healthy. What we do is we do this sort of preventive care. Well, let's look at your labs and let's put you on this medication or whatever. And we know that you may, we pretend we know that that's going to make you live longer, be healthier, when that's probably not the case. It's kind of lazy medicine, in my view, just to plug somebody into an algorithm and say, these are your labs. This is what we think you should do. These are the drugs you should be on, when really we're not doing that. And I think I put so much emphasis on fixing people today, because I think, and this is speculation on my part, but I think people that are healthy, that feel good, will probably live longer. They certainly will have a better quality of life and a better health span, but it probably will help their lifespan. But I can't say that definitively, so I don't. And I sort of, anytime anybody says it, like all these longevity gurus that think they're going to live to 180 and they're going to take the Dave Asprey's, now this Brian Johnson guy, the Walter Longo's, whatever, that think they're going to live to 120 and be healthy. No one has done it. And so until somebody, you know, if they start producing 120-year-old people that are lean, fit, healthy, smiling, mentally cognizant, you know, then I'm going to pay attention to that. But that has not happened yet. So until it does, I'm going to be very skeptical.
No, I fully am on the same page with you. And I like to just focus on today and not just focus forward. It's just enjoy your life today. Like, that's what really matters. For the upcoming year on carnivore, where would you like to see the community go or shift, or even just a few years out, where would you love to see carnivore maybe grow into more? Or maybe it's research, maybe it's the growth of Rivero and other people willing to try carnivore. Where would you love to see carnivore?
I would like to see it be a accepted therapeutic tool first as an option, because again, as a physician, my main goal is to take care of sick people. I don't care if some athlete wants to do it or somebody wants to make it a lifestyle, or, you know, because that's all fine and nice, but I think it really should be, we should recognize it as a valid therapeutic tool and not be dogmatic about it. I think we should get away from dogmatism, because I don't think it helps. I think, you know, unfortunately, social media being what it is, it's sort of emphasizes the people that are willing to do the outrageous things. You know, you got Liver King out there eating raw testicles and the Testicle King guy. I mean, it's just, that stuff is ridiculous. It's unnecessary. Hopefully we get away from that. We get to, like, what is sort of realistic and practical. Like I said, you know, if I'm out there saying just eat ground beef and eggs and you're good, that's, people can get behind that. But what gets the attention is some wacko eating raw brains and testicles. I mean, and this is what, you know, the media focuses on, social media focuses on, and it's sort of a disservice to the many, because a lot of people are off put by that. You know, they find, I'm not doing that. I'm not eating baboon testicles once a week. Why would I want to do that? I wouldn't do that personally. If the carnivore diet would have been presented to me as, you know, I need to eat these raw organs and things like that, I would never have done it. There would have never been Sean Baker carnivore. There would never been a carnivore diet book written. But I came across a bunch of people that are saying, hey, just eat steak and whatever, ground beef. And it was very reasonable for me to try. And so that's where my genesis comes from. And I like to credit those people, the Kelly Hogans, the Charles Maddox, or the Charles Washingtons, the, you know, the
Emerald Hearn.
Joe Andersons and Charlene Andersons and those people that were doing things that was something I felt I could easily do that because I like eating steak. I like eating eggs. I'm not so much about, you know, raw brains and kidneys and testicles and things like that that have been popularized by maybe some other folks.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I went to nutritional therapy school and it's a fact that there are certain nutrients in liver that there's a lot of, but it's not required. And it took me to work with so many different carnivores to realize, oh, you don't actually need to eat liver to thrive on this way of eating. And I think you and I have both been doing this for over 5 years. And I actually never eat liver now because of different reasons, but I assume you don't really eat organ meats too. And I think we both look, I know I'm not standing, but we both look relatively healthy, right?
Well, you know, I'm coming into my 8th year. So December will start my 8th year. And just because liver has a lot of vitamins, so does a multivitamin. I mean, so you can make the argument, well, you need to be eating 3 multivitamins a day. There is sufficient, and then there's more than sufficient. And I think, you know, again, this is the thing that the old timers have been doing this now. Now they're into their 15th, 18th, 20th right. year, said from the very beginning. We see people that come in and they're like pushing organ meats and they always end up quitting the diet and going away and you never hear from them again. And that's kind of what we've seen. In that respect, it's something that it sounds good on paper and you can paint a big story. Oh, the indigenous tribes, our ancestors ate the whole animal, which may or may not have been true. I mean, we're looking at, when we look at these modern populations, the Hadza, you know, out there in Tanzania, they're running around chasing and eating baboon testicles because that's all they got left. But you put them in rather than a subsistence situation into a surplus situation, like which would clearly have existed tens of thousands of years ago, hundreds of thousands of years ago, when you got plenty of animals to hunt and plenty of meat and fat, maybe you wouldn't have been relegated to sort of eating every little last morsel because you got so much around you. And that's, even animals demonstrate that same thing. When there's lots of fat animals around, like lions and stuff like that, they leave a lot behind. They're just like, yeah, we got plenty. I'm not gonna, you know, eat, scavenge the eyeballs and everything else that may be generally thought of. Because I don't know, why is it that you know, eating organ meats is not pleasant to me? It just doesn't taste good. Do I think that 100,000 years ago, my taste buds would have been different? Maybe they would have been. I don't know. I suspect it would have been the same. It's like, give me the good bits. And then if I'm starving, I'll eat that. But the rest of it, I'm probably not going to eat. But anyway, that's an argument we'll never know because we can't definitively go back there. We don't have a time machine. We've got evidence that we were eating big fatty animals like elephants. I mean, that was clear that we ate a lot of fat. And I think a lot of times when you see animals go for the viscera, right? You see, well, the alpha wolf gets and eats the guts first. Well, that's where the fat is too. Yeah. I mean, you could just as well make the argument that's where the fat is because they're hunting lean animals. A zebra is pretty lean. And the only place it has fat on its body is not going to be its legs and arms. It's going to be inside. And it may be just a desire to get fat. So it's interesting.
Yeah, it makes sense. And some arguments say that it's because the organs are the easiest place to access because of all the ribs and stuff. So, I mean, like you said, we'll never know. But I just think it goes back to your first point that if you want to eat this way long term, you have to enjoy what you eat. Because if you're muscling through every meal and then forcing yourself to take either supplements or take different organs or, you know, freeze dry and swallow it and gag on it, you're not going to last. And I just think if you just weigh the pros and cons, it's actually just focus on what you enjoy, because this is for health today, not health for tomorrow or for longevity, but just what will make you feel your best and what will allow you to enjoy. I think it's important to look forward to eating a very, you know, crusted, grilled ribeye than thinking of, okay, now I have to eat 2 ounces of liver. There's such a difference in even your mindset into going into that meal. So I think that's important.
Yeah. I mean, I think from a success standpoint and a sustainability standpoint, one, you can't be hungry all the time. Two, you got to like what you eat. And if you're figuring out recipes to, you know, like all these recipes for us, like how to gag this stuff down to disguise the flavor. I mean, that's the recipe basically. It's like, well, why the hell am I eating it in the first place? It's the same argument why we don't like to eat bitter things. I mean, it's a warning signal, I think, in many ways. And yet we've got all these bitter foods that they're sort of like, you know, saying it's a learned taste and it's acquired taste. No, it was wired into you because maybe you're not supposed to eat those things. We know that little kids, you know, you stick a Brussels sprout in front of a little kid and they're going to be spitting it out within a second. You give them a steak, you know, whether it's cooked or not, you know, primarily most of the time we feed these kids steaks and they're gnawing on that like crazy. I did a raw meat experiment years ago. I tried that. I did a month of eating nothing but raw and I literally didn't like it. I was just like, I did not look forward to a single meal. I was like, oh shit, I got to eat another bowl of ground beef, raw ground beef. And it was just, and I ate, you know, nice stuff. And it was, but I just, I would never have been able to stay on that diet. There's no way I would have been able to sustain that. So, I mean, it's just, and that's maybe just me. I know there are people that do raw meat, and I'm like, fine, that's fine. Just be careful you don't get an infection, because there have been people
yes.
that have gotten serious, serious, long lasting infections due to that. Amber Hearn is one of them. She said it took her like 2 years.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she got sick from some raw meat. It took her like 2 years to recover from that. And I've talked to other people that are the same. So it's just be mindful of that. You know, it's something, you know, at the very least, just sear the surface. You're going to need to sear the surface real quick, kill any surface bacteria, and then you can eat the inside rare if you want. I think that's probably a more realistic, because you're still getting 95% of the supposed benefits you believe that eating raw meat confers. And I don't know that really it's that much impressive anyway, but that's how I would do it. If I was going to push for maybe eating raw meat, I would just sear steaks quickly and then go from there.
Yeah. As a nutritionist, I hear the raw argument a lot, because what about the little amount of vitamin C or the water soluble vitamins? And so for a long period, because that logic made sense to me, and it is true that cooking reduces some amounts, we just don't know exactly what, but we kept running stool tests on certain people that were really sick. And then we would see E. coli. And so every time we'd go back and ask, what do you eat on your diet? And a lot of them ate raw meat. And so ever since then, we don't advocate for it, because it just takes one or two bad meats. And if you're eating it three times a day or two times a day, there's just a higher chance of eating a meat that's contaminated. And so for that reason, our practice, we just don't recommend raw meat, just because we see how sick people get. And I didn't even realize that Amber got sick off raw meat as well.
Yeah. She said it took her like 2 years to get over that. So yeah, I think that's reasonable. I think that I'm not an advocate for well done meat, to be honest. It's a taste guy that you're ruining a steak when you do that. But yeah, I mean, that's I think that's very fair to say.
Okay. Well, I'll just wrap up with a few more fun questions. If you could eat a fun carnivore meal with a historical figure, who would you sit down and eat your meal with?
Historical figure, golly, I don't even know. How about Mark Twain? I was just thinking about Mark Twain. He's a funny dude, man. Yeah, I don't know if you're into Mark Twain. He seemed like I think I would like his sense of humor. And I don't know if he was. I don't think maybe he was carnivore. Who knows? But just off the top of my head, just because I've been thinking about him, I posted something from him. He had a statement. It says, "I was educated once. It took me years to get over it." And that's very emblematic of what I've gone through.
Oh, like, no, totally.
You know, it's like I've become interested in this type of diet despite my education, despite my medical training. It's just like, because it's almost a hindrance, because you almost get, it's almost like systematically brainwashed the wrong way. Right. So maybe him, that might be fun to meet.
I could see that. He has a lot of good quotes. What's the largest amount of steak you've consumed in one meal? You could do ounces, pounds.
8 pounds.
8 pounds? Oh my gosh. Pounds.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You remember this guy, Cole Robinson, the snake diet guy?
Yes.
So I interviewed him, gosh, 5 years ago when I was working with Zach, you know, Zach Bitter, the runner.
Right.
Zach's a good guy. And we did an interview with him, and he's, you know, doing his crazy stuff. But he was telling me, yeah, you gotta eat and do a 48 hour fast. I said, well, how do you do? He said, well, you eat enough for 2 days and then you fast for 2 days. So I said, well, in one meal. I said, okay, well, I eat 4 pounds of steak a day. So for 2 days, I need to eat 8 pounds. And so I sat there and I ate 8 pounds of meat. And after about 3 pounds, it wasn't fun anymore. And I was just like gorging. And it took me like, I don't know, an hour to eat that meal. Normally I can eat, you know, I'll eat a pound of steak in 3 or 4 minutes. So, but I mean, people say, I need to slow down. You're inhaling your food. But so I ate 8 pounds of meat, and then I felt literally like a crocodile that had just eaten a goat. I mean, I was so full, and I couldn't do anything but lay on a couch I had to lay down for 4 hours because I couldn't move. I was so miserable. And I was like, I'm never doing this again, because it just doesn't make sense. So for me, a 2 pound meal for me is perfect. I mean, I feel good. I taste the whole grade the whole way. But once I get past about 2.5 pounds, then it starts to become more of a chore. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of that's a meal for me. That's what I like to eat what I want to eat and feel relatively full and satiated. But beyond that, it starts to become where it's just, it's not fun. And so like when I'm trying to put on muscle and trying to gain weight on carnivore, I have to get into that eat more than I enjoy type of situation. That's what a lot of people that say, I can't put on muscle. I'm saying you got to really push it to sort of gain weight in some cases for carnivore. For some people, it depends on who they are. But yeah, 8 pounds was my most. Now I will tell you, I think this is worth pointing out here. So I interviewed with Zach again, Molly Schuyler, who is a competitive eater, female, and she's probably your size. I mean, she's probably 120 pounds at most, right?
Okay.
And she went up to Madison, Wisconsin for an all-you-can-eat prime rib challenge. And the record was 10 pounds. Somebody had literally gone in there and ate 10 pounds, right? So she goes in there and says, hey, can I eat more? Can I just keep going? because she knew she was going to. So she goes in there, eats 5 pounds, 10 pounds, go past it, 11 pounds, beats it, eats 15 pounds, eats 20 pounds, gets to 22 and a half pounds. And they say, I'm sorry, we have no more steak. We're done. You've eaten us out of the entire restaurant. She was still going at 22 and a half pounds. And just interestingly enough, if you look up like a gray wolf, the capacity of a gray wolf, which weighs about 140 pounds, can eat about 22 and a half pounds of meat. I mean, it just happened that those things lined up. So that may be the human stomach capacity or very near it that you could do. Now you probably wouldn't have to eat again for a week, but it's possible. But 8 was for me, I was miserable with that. And I don't ever want to do that again. I'll sometimes go to these like all you can eat Brazilian restaurants. And I'll pound down 4 or 5, at one of those, churrascaria places. Right. Just to get my money worth, because I'm like, if I'm going to pay $50, I'm going to get $50 worth of meat in me. So anyway, but yeah,
that's good. Every time we have a client that says they can't eat enough meat, I'm totally going to tell the story of, well, did you know that Dr. Baker ate 8 pounds of meat in one sitting? I mean, that's a lot, but yeah. It just shows, because we have clients that say that they can't hit a pound of meat in a sitting, or some won't even eat 3/4 of a pound. And it's just, we need them to eat more for their thyroid and their hormone function. Yeah. So it's a journey, but
it takes some time. I think, and like I said, most people they'll find their capacity goes up. There's conversely, some people, it's kind of funny when they first start carnivore, because they're so nutrient depleted, they become voracious. And like small women, 110 pound women putting down 3 or 4 pounds. But then that levels off I think our body has this sort of nutrient sensing thermostat, so, as you will, that kind of says, okay, we got enough fat soluble vitamins. Now we can dial it back a little bit, perhaps.
No, that totally makes sense. As we close, last question, people watching this, is there a final tip or anything? If people are brand new to carnivore, they're just participating in World Carnivore Month for the first time, is there something that you would say, do this?
I think just surround yourself. Even if it's temporary, jumping on a community, it could be our community, it could be, Judy, I'm sure you have a group. That's so helpful. I mean, it's so helpful to have a supportive, surround yourself with supportive people, because it is, you're still swimming upstream. You're going against the grain. A lot of people will be critical of you. Maybe your physician won't support you. Your family won't support you. You need to find people that have done it, because a lot of people, they hear about it, they go off on their own, they try it. And then maybe they just don't have the knowledge that would help them to get through some transition issues that occur. So I think that, I mean, there's a lot of tips I could give people, but I think just get in an environment where you have those resources, surround yourself with resources, support, accountability, and motivation. And that's really going to definitely increase your likelihood of success.
I completely agree. I think the community aspect is so huge. Where can people find you? If people are interested in joining Rivero when it finally launches, where can they find that in? Just anywhere else.
Yeah. So if you go to Rivero, as spelled on my t-shirt here, Rivero,
it'll be in the show notes.
.com. You can set up on the waiting list. We have about, I think, 2000 people on the waiting list right now to join. So we're excited. We're going to have a lot of patients, but get on there. Nonetheless, as soon as we have a spot, we'll email people and let them know we're accepting patients. That's where you can go to get on Rivero. If you need a physician that's supportive, that supports you in your quest of it. And just to be clear, Rivero is not 100% carnivore. There will be other versions, ketogenic, low. It's mostly going to be low carb, but it's going to be eliminations. We're going to work with the patient where they need to be. Not everybody needs to go carnivore. That's clear. So there's that. If you want to follow me, right now I still have carnivore.diet. I do a meeting every single day, 7 days a week, unless I'm traveling. Carnivore.diet, you can join for free, sign up for a free month. And then if you like it, you can continue on. It's still pretty inexpensive. That's where I'm at every day. If you want to talk to me directly, I do consultations. So that's, you can go on the website and find out if you wanted to book a one-on-one session with me, I do that still. Don't know how much longer I'll be doing that, but I'm still doing it for the foreseeable future. And then my social media, Instagram, Sean Baker, 1967. So Shawn Baker, 1967. I'm on Twitter at S Baker MD. I've got what's the other one?
YouTube,
Sean Baker MD. I'm on TikTok, Sean Baker MD. I should have aligned them all the same name, but I don't know. I just haven't done that. So one day maybe.
Are you out of all of the social media jails now?
I'm probably shadow banned in all of them, but okay. I'm out of jail. At least I'm out of jail in YouTube. YouTube suspended my channel like 5 times.
Oh, okay.
I almost lost it, on several occasions. But it seems to be, and that is a concern. And I know when I go on Rogan, I'm going to bring this up again, because I think it's so important. All the I mean, the suppression, they talk about not freedom of speech, but not freedom of reach is the new sort of slogan, which means, yeah, you're allowed to say what you ever want, but we're going to show it to two people instead of the hundreds of thousands of people that might or otherwise. It's still censorship in a way. And so
right.
We've got to push back against the censorship and however we do it legally, you know, supporting, you know, at least Twitter or X is a little bit more free. I mean, there's some other sites that are there, but I mean, gosh, you know, it's systematically harder to be successful when you have a message that doesn't go with the corporate message and, you know, the corporate pharmaceutical processed food, you know, big is beautiful, healthy at any, right. any size, eat garbage and take your Ozempic shots. I mean, anybody who pushes back from that is going to be suppressed, unfortunately. But the good news is enough people are stepping back that they can't sort of suppress the truth forever. And I think it's coming out and that shows by the growth of carnivore that people are just going by results because no one would do this if it didn't work. There would be nobody that would voluntarily give up all these other foods if they weren't seeing tremendous benefit. And I think that's why it's been so successful.
No, I love it. I think that's a great way to end. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's always a pleasure. And I'm sure we'll do this again in 1 year and we'll have exciting news. I'm sure Rivera will be up and running and you could share even amazing patient studies. So I am looking forward to that. But thank you so much for everything you do. If you didn't start getting onto Rogan and doing your carnivore stuff, I wouldn't also be here too. So it's I'm always indebted to you as well. So thank you.
All right, Judy, keep up the good work. Thanks so much. Have a great rest of your day. Bye-bye.
You too. Talk to you later. Bye. Okay, guys, I hope you enjoyed this interview. It was fun. It was a little bit light and then a lot of serious too, but I hope it just gives you some information and motivation to do World Carnivore Month successfully. It's always a pleasure to sit down with Dr. Baker because he's so practical and balanced in his way of carnivore. And we like to be that way too, because we truly believe in meeting clients and patients where they are. And that is also for the community. I can share a perfect diet that has every single micronutrient and macronutrient to be perfect. But if you can't follow that for more than 5 days-ish before you fall off, then it doesn't really matter. It's all about consistency, and consistency will really be supported, like Dr. Baker said, when you eat what you like and you eat sufficiently. And then the rest can be nuanced and stuff that you don't have to worry about until you have to. As a reminder, we have finally opened a Carnivore Journey Beginners Group and Carnivore Support Group for people that are looking to get to root cause healing. This is not just a momentary dietary change, but a change for true healing. And we have carnivore discussions and lessons, and we have group Q&As, and we have accountability partners, and we have challenges, and we have longer-term challenges so that you can learn more about carnivore and just holistic healing so that you can then find the steps and things that you need to work on to get to root cause healing. It's a lot of fun, and make sure to join. We have a lot of content that we do not share publicly. Okay, guys, make sure to eat a lot of meat. Take care of your bodies because it is the only place you have to live. I will talk to you later. Bye, guys. Thanks for listening to the Nutrition with Judy podcast. If you liked what you heard today, please make sure to leave a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app so more listeners like you can find the show. If you want more practitioner care and support, head over to nutritionwithjudy.com/groups so you can get more real talk about carnivore, the environment, and root cause healing. You can also find my content on Nutrition with Judy's YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Make sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter and learn more about in-depth articles with infographics at nutritionwithjudy.com/articles. You can find my two books, Carnivore Cure and The Complete Carnivore Diet for Beginners, on carnivorecure.com and amazon.com. At the heart of Nutrition with Judy's practice, our mission lies with a deep, unwavering passion for service and community. We will continue to empower you to have the knowledge and tools to live a life nearly symptom-free, because we firmly believe in healing and wellness for all.